You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney Neggebauer, and today is Thursday, June 4th, 2015. We have a great guest lined up today, Lynn Berry from NOAA's Protected Resources Division. But first, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about what I've been doing over the last month. I've been up on San Juan Island doing a little bit of work with Bob Otis in the Limekiln Lighthouse and getting ready for a really exciting new program that we're doing together with SAMN, the Salish Sea Association of Marine Naturalists, and the San Juan Island Land Bank. This is huge news. We are setting up a program where we are stationing volunteers out at the Westside Preserve, which is the property just south of Limekiln State Park, or better known as Whale Watch Park. And the site is amazing. It's a totally unique ecosystem, not found really anywhere else. And it has whales that swim right close to shore. And so we have a training coming up June 13th. That's a Saturday. And we're going to start at the San Juan Island Library at 11 a.m. So if you're interested in volunteering for this program, join us there. And then afterwards, we're going to go out to the Westside Preserve and learn from the land bank staff all about the area. I was just out there last week and I got a full tour of all three areas with three different pullouts, hiked all around, learned about the prairie ecosystem there and the unique wildflowers, including endangered golden paintbrush, even some cacti. Yes, cactus grow on San Juan Island. And so I'm totally looking at the property with different eyes now. And so if you're interested in watching whales this summer and learning about new habitats and sharing all the information with others, I encourage you to come to the training. Again, June 13th, it's a Saturday. More info at whalescout.org. And even if you can't come, please email SJI for San Juan Island Naturalist @gmail.com and let us know if you can't come but you're interested in participating. And we are working on setting up a different training. And for those of you that live off island, there will be shuttle service going out to the Westside Preserve provided by San Juan Island Transit. And we're thinking that shifts could be between 11 and 2 and 2 to 5 to accommodate some off island ferry travel. So to register, just email sjinaturalist@gmail.com. And I really look forward to this program and seeing lots of you out there watching whales. Earlier this week, the first week in June, we did have part of LPOD come in. The family groups with the new baby L121 were seen up in near Tofino. And that group didn't come down to San Juan Island, at least yet. But the Center for Whale Research was out there and confirmed some other family groups. And you can go on to our Facebook page to watch some video that they took. Also later this month, June 27th, we are doing our first summer kickoff for our big series of events that are all targeted at salmon habitat restoration. And so our first event will be with Friends of North Creek Forest in Bothell. And these are probably our favorite events right now. We had over 100 people come to our last event on January 31st. Okay, winter time. Now we are going to be there June 27th, and I'm sure that the weather will be amazing. Free barbecue and dorsal fins for kids. It's a lot of fun. Every time we go there, it's a little bit different. Sometimes we're planting trees, removing invasive species, watering. It sounds like there'll be a lot of watering to be done. And just to really get out there and enjoy the work that we've done and see those plants and trees that we've planted long ago growing up. So go ahead and RSVP info@whalescout.org to RSVP, and that will make sure that we have enough food, free hot dogs, hamburgers, snacks, drinks. It's so much fun. I can't tell you how much fun these events are and how much good work is being done to protect North Creek and the Chinook salmon that are spawning in there, and the food for killer whales that we are restoring. And just this weekend, Saturday, June 6th, if you live in Bothell, Sustainamania is going on. And I know a lot of my listeners out there are close to Bothell, so I want to give you a heads up about that. And then later in the summer, following the Superpod week on San Juan Island, we are going to be doing another restoration event. It's actually more of a cleanup this time at Third Lagoon. It's on the very south end of San Juan Island. You go all the way down towards Cattle Point, past the lighthouse, and then there's Third Lagoon there. And we're doing that project in conjunction with Salmon and the San Juan Island Land Bank. There's like what's been described as decades worth of plastic detritus that's accumulated in this lagoon, where it's an amazing mix of salt and fresh water. And so, you know, a lot of this, the work that we're going to be doing on San Juan Island, meeting with people, talking to them about whales, the San Juan Islands provide a great habitat for juvenile salmon that are growing up, that are getting big, that will eventually become orca food. And so keeping the marine habitats and environments and waters as clean as possible is very important. So again, register by emailing info@whalescout.org, especially if you're going to be up on the island listening to all the anti-captivity talks and presentations and events. Stay on Saturday with us and bring your rubber boots. Come out and go mucking around with us and clean up Third Lagoon with us. And if you want to stay totally up to date with all of the events and learn what's happening near you, there's this new feature on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook by just typing in Whale Scout to the search bar and hit the events tab. And up at the top right corner, you can hit subscribe. And then you'll be notified whenever there's a helping out event near you. So that's a really cool thing. Just added to Facebook. And of course, if you want to know more about what we're doing through our newsletter with interesting stories, features of volunteers, updates on how many plants we've planted since we've begun, invasive species removed, send an email to info@whalescout.org and ask to be included to our newsletter subscription list. It's totally free. We put out about 4 a year, and it's a lot of fun to read and go through. It's totally online, and so you can click things, watch videos, listen to the podcast. It's really cool. And another brand new feature, we have a new Whale Scout hotline. The number is 888-421-1664. And again, 888-421-1664. There's an option to contact me personally. Another option to listen to the information about our helping out events. And then lastly, which is a really cool feature, if you're a fan of our podcast and you want to send in your questions and be on the Whale Scout podcast, you can leave a recorded question and we will play those questions and have our guest speakers answer those questions for you. So we are really looking forward to that feature. Go ahead, call it, do it now and test it out. See how you like it. And we look forward to including your voice on the Whale Scout podcast. And now without further ado, I'd like to invite Lynn Berry. She works for NOAA's Protected Resources Division, and she's been really involved with the recovery plan of southern resident killer whales. And there's a new Species in the Spotlight campaign that they're just now launching, and we are going to learn more about it. We are back here on the Whale Scout podcast. We're joined by Lynn Berry, and she works for the Protected Resources Division at NOAA. Can you tell us a little bit about your role at NOAA?
Sure. Thanks, Whitney. I'm the lead for our recovery program for the endangered southern resident killer whales, and I also work on other marine mammal issues along the West Coast. And we also have some ESA-listed rockfish in Puget Sound, and that's all part of what I do.
And there's been a lot of interesting things going on with this new Species in the Spotlight campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So Species in the Spotlight is a new campaign that's a nationwide effort from the NOAA leadership to identify a small number of the most at-risk species and try to raise the profile of our recovery program. And southern resident killer whales is one of those species.
And I was poking around the website today, and there is the statistic that's listed on there that says that that less than 1% of species that were listed under ESA have been removed due to extinction. I mean, that's an amazing track record.
We have had some successes under the Endangered Species Act. Yes, very few extinctions, but we certainly don't want to see any more, and that's part of the Species in the Spotlight effort. And we have had some successes with marine mammals. We've had two marine mammals that have been taken off the endangered species list in the last few decades. One was the gray whales that are along our coast, and the other was a population segment of stellar sea lions that is also in Washington waters. So those are great success stories.
And as I understand, humpback whales are also potentially going to be delisted.
We did get a couple petitions asking us to sort of revisit the status of humpback whales. And one of the first challenges there was to figure out what is the structure of humpback whale populations. And so we recently put out a proposed rule identifying a number of different populations and then, you know, determining which ones we would still need protection for under the Endangered Species Act and which populations could actually be delisted. So that's in the works.
And are there any other marine mammal species that are rebounding, that are getting close?
You know, there's a few of the large whale species that have really come back post-whaling era. But again, one of our challenges is understanding what the population structure is. That's often a key step in evaluating whether populations are healthy and could be taken off the endangered species list.
And so these eight species that are in the species spotlight, can you explain exactly how they were selected amongst others?
There were a couple of criteria used to pick these species to be in the spotlight. Under the Endangered Species Act, we can identify sort of a recovery priority number that's based on is the population in decline? Do we have a good sense of what needs to be done to achieve recovery? And also, is that a species that's in conflict with a lot of human activities? So these eight meet those criteria, and that's how they were selected.
And I've heard a couple of people that had the impression that the species that were selected may be sort of your more charismatic species. Obviously, this is not the case straight across the board, you know, because not all these species have cute, cuddly faces like the white abalone. How would you respond to that?
Actually, it just came out through using those criteria that the species that rose to the top of the list did represent a variety of different taxa. We have invertebrates with abalone. We've got a sea turtle on there. There's fish, a number of fish species, and then a couple marine mammals. And we've got a couple whales, Cook Inlet belugas, and southern residents, and then also Hawaiian monk seals. So it just ended up being a variety. Some of those, particularly the marine mammals, are the more charismatic, top of the food chain predators, but it definitely spans a gamut of different types of species.
Yeah, and it also spans a pretty large range, geographically speaking, between Hawaii and Cook Inlet and Alaska. So I also found that to be interesting and sort of thinking that putting a lot of effort into these species will reach a lot of habitat from all over the West Coast and the Atlantic as well.
Yes, and I think between the different species that are along the West Coast, we do have some overlap with the salmon species, the leatherback sea turtles, southern resident killer whales, and abalone. You know, if you map them all out, there's definitely overlap, and there's definitely a lot of important habitat and actions that can really benefit a number of species across the board.
And can you tell us a little bit about how this Species in the Spotlight campaign will benefit southern resident killer whales?
So the real key for me is this national perspective and this national focus, just sort of bringing a new audience, perhaps some new support. Because as you're probably aware, and your listeners are too, I hope, Southern resident killer whale recovery has been a priority for us for a decade or more since the Endangered Species Act listing. And even before that, we've been dedicating funding and resources and working with partners to understand what's going on through research projects and then take positive actions to support recovery of the southern residents. So it has been a priority, and this new campaign sort of raises that level of interest and focus. And I'm hoping that it will help us bring some new partners to the table, help us work with our existing partners, and just take it another step.
And I believe that there are some new sort of not action plans, but new strategies that are being developed. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. They have asked us to put together like a 5-year strategic plan for each of the species in the spotlight. And for southern residents, we already have a recovery plan. And last year, we put out a report that gave the highlights of a decade of research and conservation for southern resident killer whales. And in that report, we have a section that's the next 10 years. So we've already given some thought about what are some of the key next steps to help address the population status of the southern residents and really try to move toward recovery. And I can share a little bit about what some of those are. Some of them address the major threats to the southern residents, including prey availability. We need to understand the whole food web, not just how southern residents are dependent on Chinook salmon. That's one of the things we've learned in the last decade. But how does the whole food web work? And how do actions that affect salmon abundance, whether it's a hatchery or a fishery or a habitat restoration action, how does that affect salmon abundance? And what is that downstream effect on not just southern residents, but other salmon predators as well? And our own fisheries, we're predators for Chinook salmon as well. So that's one of the things we're working on the prey side. For pollution and contaminants, and with some other concerns as well, like disease, we want to bring together data from a number of different studies and really get a better sense of assessing the health of individual killer whales. Can we link the contaminant levels we're seeing in these whales to what we see as far as the reproductive age females, how successful they are, how calves are surviving, and also the survival of adult animals as well. So that's really on the pollution and contaminant side, as well as bringing in some data from stranding network investigations and other health-related projects. And then the third major threat is vessels and noise. And in 2011, we put out vessel regulations to keep boats a little further away from the whales, give them some space, and make sure that they could carry on their activities without too many impacts from vessels and noise. So this will be our fifth year with those regulations in place, and we're really focused on sort of assessing the effectiveness of those regulations. How well are we doing at protecting the whales, and what kind of impact are we having on the local economy? So those are just a few of the examples of things we're looking to for the future.
What would you say for the last 10 years has been your biggest success? And then for the 10 years moving forward, what's your highest priority?
When southern resident killer whales were first listed under the Endangered Species Act, one of the primary data gaps we had was the winter distribution and habitat use of these southern resident killer whales. Over the last 10 years, we've learned so much about where the whales go, where they spend their time. The range of where the whales have been seen has actually increased over that time. We knew they were going down to California. We now also have information that they go as far north as Southeast Alaska. So through a couple different research projects, satellite tagging, and also doing some acoustic monitoring, we're learning more about that key part of the range of the whales. And we're just starting to get information about what they're eating, what parts of that habitat they're using the most, and also understanding what types of activities out in the Pacific Ocean might be impacting the whales. So I'd say that's one of our biggest successes over the last 10 years. As far as the highest priority for the next 10 years, one of the major parts of our recovery program for southern resident killer whales relies so heavily on recovery of salmon, and Chinook salmon in particular. So I think it's a challenge as we move forward to integrate orca recovery and salmon recovery together, and it's going to take a major coastwide effort to address all of the habitat impacts and different types of impacts that affect salmon and then therefore also affect the whales. So I think that's an area we're focusing on, but really our program is comprehensive in addressing all of the major threats.
Well, habitat restoration is one of our favorite things to do just because it's just so fun.
Getting your hands dirty. I love it.
And, you know, I think it's amazing just how much data has been collected over the last, I mean, really the last winter with the satellite tag data leading to amazing offshore cruises. Do you think that there's any way that with all this new data coming in that was possibly unexpected, this unexpected success in finding residents offshore, seeing what they were eating, collecting scat samples, fecal samples, is there any way that critical habitat could be extended before the 2017 sort of, not deadline, but target date?
Well, the critical habitat process does take time. And while we do have this great data that's been collected, we haven't had the chance and the time to analyze that data in a comprehensive way. And so one of the reasons for our schedule in order to consider coastal areas for critical habitat is to get some analysis in hand from our science center. Things like the food web modeling for inland water critical habitat in Washington State, prey and salmon is a major component. It's an essential feature of that critical habitat. So getting a better understanding of, you know, what prey the whales are using on the coast is important for that process. So one piece is getting all the science in our hand in a way that's sort of got some more sophisticated analysis rather than just, yep, here's dots on a map from where the satellite tag showed us the whales went, and here's a couple samples of what they ate. We want to do a little more in-depth analysis. And then there's also other parts of the process as well. We need to consider economic impacts of designating critical habitat. So once we have an idea of what those essential features are for the whales, where that critical habitat might be, we have to evaluate economics as well as other considerations like national security. So going through each of those steps, I know 2017 sounds like a long way off, but in my mind, it's actually right around the corner, and we need to get some work done in order to make it through all of those different review processes and weighing the benefits of critical habitat designation versus things like economics and national security. So we're definitely working on it.
And how can listeners sitting at home that are, you know, really have a lot of interest in southern resident killer whales, how can they help get involved with this Species in the Spotlight campaign or southern resident recovery? What is your recommendation?
Well, part of our Species in the Spotlight campaign is to sort of renew and identify new partnerships. We work with a lot of partner groups, particularly on education and outreach, not just about, you know, what's going on with the whales, what the threats are, how their population is doing, but also to educate people about actions that they can take. We've got classroom programs with a group called Killer Whale Tales, really teaching kids about the whales and what their environmental footprint looks like. We work with institutions like the Seattle Aquarium. That's got a great interactive orca family center exhibit. And also there's some exhibits up at the Whale Museum, and we've got other programs going on with them. And so learning about what different organizations are in the community, like Whale Scout for one, and how people can get engaged and involved. We've got information on our website. And then there's links to all of our partners in our kind of recovery implementation section of our webpage.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And I have to say that I've been spending a lot of time up at Lime Kiln State Park, and I've been seeing a lot of the killer whale tail programs with tons of field trips, you know, like over 100 kids at a time coming off school buses, going to the park, watching whales, learning from Dr. Bob Otis and Jeff Hogan and Deborah Giles. It's been amazing seeing all those kids. So I just, again, want to thank you so much for sharing this information with us, and we hope that we can talk to you again very soon.
Sure. Anytime. I'm happy to share information about the whales and our recovery program, and also, yeah, how people can get involved. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Whale Scout podcast today. Again, I want to remind you about our brand new toll-free hotline. That number again is 888-421-1664. And you can call that number up, leave me a question, leave our guests any questions, and your recorded message will be played right here on the Whale Scout podcast. And we really want to hear your voice and get you involved. So give us a call, and thank you again for listening. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information. Ma natif est trop bien démodée, aussi mal coiffée que rasée, j'entretiens ma gueule négligée.